Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boyle with Cephas Radio. I'm in the studio with Nazarita Goldhammer. It's May 19th, 10:30 a.m. Mountain Time. And we're concluding our segment on deep listening today. That's not to say that we don't have a lot more to think about and talk about, but we're going to be moving on. Next week, we thought we would start a conversation about current world events, state of things, and see where that takes us. But for today, we're going to make some conclusory statements. So I guess make up some thoughts that we can all take with us. I don't think necessarily anything different, but I think a good way to wrap things up. So, you know, I've been throughout my life and my professional life a listener and with my own opportunities for growth. I think I'm a better listener now than I was ever, but I think I have a long way to go. And that's just like a basic statement. And I also think that most people are in this boat. And I think we're all struggling to hear the other. This whole radio show was in part envisioned to become more aware of the radical other, to see the world from the other's perspective. And that's not just limited to humans. It's not just limited to people we know or people we're in some kind of relationship with. It's seriously to adjust at a deep level the way we approach being alive. And in my perspective, we are all very driven and pushed to play the role that roles that have been designed structurally and the ones that we choose. But we didn't choose the ones that were designed structurally. When you come into the world, you don't choose the world you're coming into. If anybody said that, they would be crazy. Somebody else figured out the world, the language, the way things are, and you come in. And yet you might feel askew to that. You might feel like there's something more going on. Like the reality of the earth is not fairly represented in language and not fairly represented in humanist value systems or your own biological personal history. And you start thinking about these things and you figure out that maybe what you even think is deep listening isn't deep listening, because you're listening in terms of a language and a structure that you didn't design. Even romantic relationships or friendships, a lot of the content for how we discourse didn't come from us. We're in these relationships. So this is a really important point. You've got the self that you are, this malleable pluripotentiality, and you're plopped in the middle of a mess trying to make sense out of it. And so even if you are a deep listener, I would think that it would be difficult to make sense out of what you're hearing, because we lack, in some cases, representative language that can say what it is that we're listening to. So it raises a theoretical question about the boundary of epistemology, the boundary of knowledge, and where that boundaries faith. So faith or deep intuition reside at these penumbras of knowledge. And I, you know, you could call it the transcendental or the transcendent. But what it is it's everything that you don't perceive, and that's a lot. So, you know, we published a book on thinking about the other and thinking about how to get outside of our own egocentric framework, and how we can create new value systems around that, how we can get out of our egocentrism. And I think it's a mountainous challenge for the humans I know. I don't think it's impossible. I think it's highly possible. I think it takes a lot of work. You know, even professional listeners of various types, I think they have room for improvement too. I mean, they've got their own junk from their past, but in addition, they also have to use the language of society and culture, the values, duties. And so you start looking at where the freedom is to really listen, and you see it's not so simple. Where do I have the freedom to listen? Where is that? How can I exercise that? So then a related question is the question of availability. Like, do I really want to listen? Do I care? And I think it's a good question, because I think we're pulled in so many directions. It's not that some people aren't good people, but I think we're all pulled in many directions right now. I think that's the nature of being able to survive. Life is not simple. And to make life simple right now, I think a person would become dysfunctional and they wouldn't make it. I think life is complicated. It's multidimensional. So that means we're always pulled. Our attention suffers, even if we want to be a good listener. And that's very concerning to me. That even if you have the motivation to do something, that it's set up so that it's near impossible to do. A third item is the definition of deep listening. What is it? What is deep listening? And how do I know that I'm doing it? That's a very typical a philosopher's way of looking at it. How do I know? How do I know I'm listening deeply? Is it just because another person says, yep, yep, you got it? Well, what if both people are not listening in a deep way? What if it's just two superficial egos batting something back and forth, but neither one of them is tuning in to the deeper? How do we know? There are the moral issues. What's the moral outcome if I don't listen deeply to other people, to the earth, to water, to other beings with whom we share this earth? Psychological issues of deep listening. How do I overcome my own trauma, my own confusions, my own pathologies and distortions and deceptions to listen carefully? And how do I know? Again, how do I know? What's the litmus? And on and on. So what do I get out of deep listening? I guess somebody could ask me that. Hey, what do you get out of it? What's so special about that? Why not just listen enough to get what you need and then move on? Instrumental listening. You know, listen just enough at work. Listen just enough to your spouse. Listen just enough to your kids. Listen just enough to yourself, but don't cross any lines. So we have a very defended culture right now. People are antsy. They're not at ease. They're anxious. Which means we're living more in the limbic brainstem. We're living more in a protective posture
Does that affect our listening? How available am I to listen? What if I'm not available at all? What if I really want to listen more deeply, but I just don't have what it takes? How do I live with that? How do I know that if I follow the right methodology, I'm ever going to be able to listen deeply? These are some of the questions we've been struggling with. We've looked at, we've heard from some therapists, we've heard from some philosophers, we've heard about dyadic listening, small group listening. We've heard about listening to the non-human world. We've talked about how we've come to rely primarily on what we see, the specular, as in spectator, the specular, what we see as an act of the subject-object split. What do we see? Does seeing affect how we listen? I suppose I could be so tuned into what I see that I don't listen very well. So, excuse me, I've got Nazarita on the show. And we're going to see if we can come up with a few more principles, axioms, takeaways. Just some takeaways that just questions that we can all ponder about deep listening. Nazarita, are you on the show?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. So, let's see if we can come up with a few takeaways for our listeners and to address any leftovers from previous interviews and such. And I'm sure our listeners are looking forward to hearing from you.
Yeah. What you were saying is very interesting, all the questions that come from the idea and entertaining the way of deep listening. You know, do I want to listen? Can I listen? And do I care to listen? I think those are very interesting questions that we have to really ask ourselves, because the definition really of deep listening is two things: a suspension of judgment, and the second, a willingness to receive new information. Now, usually deep listening is involved in the whole, the world, the earth, other non-humans, places in the earth, water, air, trees, and all non-humans around, and animals we're speaking of, and fish, and then humans. And most of the time, when people think of deep listening, they think of listening to another human, which is really interesting that we've become so centered in ourselves and in our humanness that we forget that if we only listen to each other, that what ends up happening is that we're stagnant. And you and I were talking about this inertness that can be physically applied to a place, usually a place that mankind has constructed that becomes like a dead zone without energy. And I see that as humans also, that we become so inert in ourselves of always thinking, how do I relate to the other human? Do I hear the other human? Do I like the other human? Is the other human good? Are they violent? That we become this chaotic, stagnant. The only way I can think of it is this duality of stagnation, inertness, and chaos. And so because we're shut off really listening, deep listening to our environment, to other species, and, the atmosphere, we've kind of shuttered ourselves away from the whole. and have taken this little part of which is only ourselves and focused on that. And I think that that's what we're feeling. When you say that we're like a defended culture and we're anxious, it's so true. And it's because we don't see ourselves as part of the whole. We see ourselves as this race that is dominant and gets to take everything for free and abuse and use anything that we want and forget that we're really part of the fabric of the whole. We're creating that knot in the fabric because we're not really deep listening. The willingness to receive new information. It isn't, you know, behind it of what am I going to do with it? Because really, when you really deep listen to the environment, to non-human others, to the atmosphere, to things around you, to yourself, that's the basis of action. Like, you can't take action unless you're actually deep listening. Because the action you take, in my view, is always going to lead to unproductive integration of the whole. You know, if you're really listening to the environment and you go to a place that has minerals, you really deep listen to it. Listen to the minerals in the earth. You would never take an action to excavate and destroy the environment of which those minerals live. So it shows that there's something missing. So it's an action that leads to a violent repercussion of an action that wasn't involved with listening. Those are some of the things that I'm thinking now of, like, we don't know how to actually listen to our environment, to listen to non-human others, that we don't even know how to sit and be receptive. And maybe it's because we're unwilling to hear what that is saying to us. And my last thought was, you know, I had a couple of experiences which were really profound for me of listening to a place in the earth that had earthquakes, and involved in that beginning listening was my fear of, like, why are there earthquakes here? And I was fearful of living there. And then when I really opened myself up a willingness to actually hear maybe what the earth was actually saying without judgment, that it was like I heard that this is just normal growth. This isn't like something that is fearful or horrible. This is normal growth. So the action I would take is to look at myself and say, what, this is how I cleanse my own judgmental thinking, is that I started to look and I say, what are superstitions built around earthquakes? I mean, there's lots of cultures that have sacrificed, you know, human beings to the earth in hopes that it would stop earthquakes or a volcano. And it's because they didn't really listen to what the earth was actually saying. The earth didn't want human sacrifice. It was merely expressing its growth. And humans, by their relating constantly to that, you know, it's their affect, like, oh, it must be about me, the human, you know, that's where we get into superstition. We get into these ways of thinking that are not productive, that are based upon humanness with the exclusion of everything but a made-up God or goddess or whatever. But that's superstition. That's where superstition, I believe, comes, because we don't know how to deep listen.
Yeah. Do you think that we don't know how to listen to the other? Is it just a lack of skill?
Yeah. I mean, if you really look at people who are in tune with the earth, and there's lots of people who are nature oriented, not the type that are more explorer type, but ones that really are in tune with nature, their whole countenance is different. They see their place in the world. I think that's how you can tell someone who is deep listening, is that they begin to see their place in the world, not as the dominant force, but as a thread in the whole. And then that gives them the view and the action to say, how can I protect the whole, and how can I help others see that? I think that's the first step, is that I know there are lots of people who write on nature, and there are some that are really in tune, like they really hear nature. They didn't just go and say, hey, I explored, I listened to my radio, and you know, I was in nature for the healing, but that they were in nature because they wanted to hear nature. They wanted to hear, and they were willing to be receptive. So I think that most of us confuse listening with preconceived ideas and hearing words with deep listening. But deep listening is different. It's like if you were just to hear one thing, and you and I have talked about this funny thing, if a tree fell in the forest, you know, would, and you weren't there, would it make a noise? Well, that's just like saying humans are the most important thing, and if humans aren't there, then nothing exists without the human. But that's my view of it. But the opposite view is, of course, there would be many things that would happen without the human. The human sees this limited, it hears a limited sound range. It sees a limited visual acuity. It feels limited. And it's only when I think that we open up a kind of a synchronicity with nature and a synchronicity with the whole cosmos that we begin to see and feel our placement and open ourselves up to amazing wonders that are in the world right in front of us that we just are unaware of. We're just unaware.
So there must also be something, some elements in an average person's self-system that prevents them from listening. If you think about developmental psychology, relational attachment theory, psychoanalytic understandings, philosophic understandings, Eastern understandings, whatever type of theoretical magnifying glass a person wants, it seems to me that there's something about how we create the self that historically affects or debilitates us in various ways. So maybe there are strengths and maybe there are weaknesses. And so I think about what I've seen my whole life, and that is we live in a capitalist society, competitive, everything, all goods are dispersed based on money. If you go to public school, you're indoctrinated in a certain kind of belief system, and then you're a young adult. And so people have, in my view, lots of resentments and angers, traumas, self-deceptions, where they really don't want to confront a healing process that they could engage in. That's what I see. I see a bunch of disgruntled, annoyed, in some cases very angry, people producing children who they train to be the same way. And I see that as a huge problem. Where do you start? To me, an important question. I don't think there's any magic. I don't think there's any one system. And I think in life, for example, if somebody said to me, go clean that garden up, or go clean up the yard, there isn't a right way and a wrong way to do that. People might start at one corner. They might start from the inside out. you know, whatever. So I think a lot of psychological issues that can be addressed in psychotherapy are problems that you chip away at. You do a little here, you do a little there, and eventually you detect some change. And maybe, you know, maybe that's what it's about here, is helping other people change. You can't just focus on yourself. And any kind of religion or healing process or philosophy or manual that says that is completely wrong-headed in my view, because we are highly interrelational. And this is one of the topics and themes, Nazarita, that came out in what you just said and what we've been talking about. We are interrelational. We are on a planet with many other beings. It's only one planet. It's not like we can banish some beings to another planet. We are definitely on a planet together. And so I think that if we had more knowledge, which we describe in our book, Vivantonomy, about how things work together, about interrelational humanity, ecosystem, interrelational dynamics, how we can interface with the radical other, we need more knowledge. We need more teaching. We need more learning. But that's not what it's about now. The schools I've been to teach you to win. They teach you to compete. They teach you to be selfish. They teach you to focus only on your completing your own desire, except for one school I went to. But for the most part, most of the schools I've been to teach you kind of how to be an alienated, selfish person. And so you get indoctrinated, right, inculcated, cultivated to be a certain kind of self. And because you're rewarded for that, any belief or experience that lies outside of that or contradicts it is suppressed. It's pushed to the periphery. Maybe even it's unconscious. So in my work, I see self-system topologies that are full of self-deception, full of ideology, people acting in accordance with their desire, their emotions, their demand, their algorithmic demand, that little nut at the core of us, the impossibility that we seek to make possible. And so we're in the world with a distorted drive. It's a distorted drive. It's a distorted algorithm. And when we move from the drive to society, society makes it even worse. And so we continue to structuralize for deception and distortion. Instrumentalized listening, it's really hard to go against the system. People look at you kind of funny. Sometimes they don't want to be around you because you're not joyful when you recognize right in front of you is another violent, deceptive ideology. And you're like, well, I don't have anything to be joyous about right now because I see the truth and you don't. And a lot of people are living within huge levels, many, many complex levels of self-deception. They're not enlightened. They don't want to be enlightened. They don't want to see the truth. Consequently, they have a very small bandwidth, they have a very small aptitude, a small intelligence, a small sensitivity, a very small ability to change. There's no space. Or the space is so microscopic that they wouldn't be able to recognize it. And for that reason, because we're so engulfed and structured and sedimented within a certain kind of self, that's that possessive self, the one that doesn't listen, the acquisitive self, the having self, the selfish self, the competitive self, the successful self, where we listen only for personal aggrandizement. It's very difficult to create a new reward system. And you have to take people where they are. If I'm trying to turn a selfish person into an unselfish person, I have to appeal to him, his or her own selfishness. To do anything other than that would be foolhardy. And this is one of the problems that, of course, Plato and Socrates, two great geniuses, take up in a lot of the dialogues. How do you create something that's different from what you have now? It's a monumental task, takes great thinking. Any more thoughts, Nazarita, that you can impart to our listeners? You know, they've been with us for 7 years, and we appreciate all of our listeners, especially this last little segment of shows, the interviews. What sorts of questions do we want to raise before we close our radio show in the next 5 or 6 minutes?
Well, some of the questions that I think involve deep listening, and they can be human-related, because if somebody wants to start in human relatedness, deep listening would apply to even as a culture. What are people trying to say through, for instance, mental illness? What is bipolar trying to say to us that if we were open, we would know? What is someone who has schizophrenia? What is that trying to impart? What is ADHD? What is autism? What is sexual ambiguity? What is hermaphrodite? What is illness? Like in a deep, deep level, if we were really open and willing to hear, even it goes wrong with humans, if what we were, what it was trying to say to us, I think that we would change our cultures. Those are the beginning questions. Like what is important to you that you struggle with? And so if you were really to hear what was being said, how would that change how we deal with things? I'll give you a kind of a fun example. I read a book, a science fiction, because I love science fiction. And in the book, a race came and was taking certain bodies of humans. I know it sounds really weird, but in the book it was that they learned from that, and they could heal all illnesses in humans. And humans were like, "Well, how did you do that? And why would you want to heal this person?" And they answered and they said, "Why wouldn't you want to heal that person? We feel like we should heal everything. Like why would you want to be sick? Why would we want another human to be sick? Why would we want another animal to be sick?" And we have to ask ourselves that question. Like that really struck me. It's like, why do we want others to be sick? And we have a whole system built up in the medical field. And I think that's one of the first things that we should really look at. Like, if we were really to look at our culture and really deep listen, why do we want to have sickness, mental illness? And what are those things saying to us? What are those conditions revealing in a very deep level about what we need to change? Because deep listening leads to the right action. And if you have the right action from deep listening, that means change. Those are some of the beginning questions. Like, why would we want to cage animals? Like, why would we want to? Why would we want to eat animals? Like, really truthfully, why would we? Why would we want to keep doing things that are harmful? Like, why would we want to destroy a beautiful place? Why do we have these thoughts that humans have to be violent? Why do we have these thoughts that there is someone going to save us from our actions? Like we have to look at those things and say, what do we keep repeating that is trying to show us something that we're not really listening to? Those are some of my questions.
Well, let's hit this head on with nihilism, where things are not as they seem. We'll eventually do a whole show on nihilism, probably this summer. I'll start with a concrete example. So there's a dog at the Texas A&M University, supposedly a really good university. And there is a researcher there who bred golden retrievers to have muscular dystrophy, like sought out to make sure they got sick genetically, and they would have horrible lives and they would die. So just a couple months ago, one of them, his name was Ganondorf, he had spent 10 years in a cage being operated on. He died, and he didn't die happy. And, you know, at the end, there was blood all over his kennel. They didn't do anything. And so there are a lot of universities that are not listening to the animals who scream in to silence. We've been over this years and years and years. Yesterday, I saw pictures of little mice who were bred to have their internal organs protrude from their body. Extremely painful. To have your inner organs on the outside of your body, or to have serious prolapses. And we don't hear what we do. And we gloss over it. The way we gloss over it is to say, oh, well, there must be some good reason why we do that. People talk like that. Or maybe it'll lead to something good. But what about the suffering? You know, it's not just human suffering. It's non-human suffering. And it's going on right now. And it's incredible suffering. Factory farming, wet markets. Billions and billions of animals are suffering in factory farms and wet markets. If you take those two and fur farms, and so we don't hear. We find ways to not hear. I think capitalism is an element. I think the way we've been trained to listen. When I grew up there were little boys and girls who raised animals to be butchered. And they found a way to justify it. And I can guarantee you, I would be shocked that any one of those kids, 8, 9, 10-year-old, went to the slaughterhouse to watch their best friend be killed. I think they would have been scarred for life. But I think what adults teach them is, well, they go off to this place and it's done quickly and humanely, and then their spirit goes to heaven. And it's another falsehood. So I think, Nazarita, deep listening requires absolute radical honesty with yourself. Radical honesty with the real. And we don't always like it. But I'll tell you, once you start situating yourself in it, life is easy. You have nothing to hide. You have nothing to move away from. No fabrications. No, nothing like that. There's no more distortion. And we live in a very extraordinarily violent, complacent, sadistic world in which we don't listen very well. Or we listen only in terms of our own professional goal, our own private interest. That's not deep listening. That's listening in accordance with the structure that somebody else already set up. And we were talking about the concept of inertness earlier today. And that creates an inert human being, an inert individual. If all you're doing is pushing buttons so you can stay even with the structure that was already provided for you, that's not very smart. It's not very creative, and it makes you a thing. So deep listening means to get out of the habit of seeing any sentient being as a thing. I want to thank everybody for tuning into our show. Again, we've been going on for 7 odd years, something like that. We're in our 7th year. It's been a while. And we're here every week and sometimes more often. We will continue to broadcast. We're contemplating adding other radio stations and possibly even a television satellite at some point. There's no reason why we can't do that. But the core is right here. It's our Blog Talk radio station, which we love, we cherish, and we're going to continue on and on and on and on. Thank you to Nazarita for being here, for being the co-host of this show. This is Deep Listening. We're going to conclude today, and then next week we're going to start a general conversation. I found that that usually leads us to good places. We'll go from there. And maybe think about the concept of nihilism. You know, what is that? When people throw that word around, what is that devil? But thank you, everybody. Thank you, Nazarita. This is Deep Listening Conclusion. This is FS Radio. And Kevin Boylow, Nazarita Goldhammer, signing out for today. We'll see you next week.